From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In the past 2 weeks, two New England newspapers with editorial pages that tend to lean in politically opposite directions both endorsed Republican John McCain as the best GOP presidential candidate in the running. First, the conservative New Hampshire Union Leader and then the liberal Boston Globe both recommended Granite State Republicans vote for McCain in the January 8th primary. In their endorsements, the papers take pains to point out their policy differences with the senator, but from their opposite political perspectives, they both come to the same conclusion. McCain's a man of character, integrity, and a guy you can trust. Senator McCain also won the coveted Des Moines Register endorsement this week on the same grounds, an impressive feat given that he's barely campaigned in Iowa. And in the very latest news, a prominent ex-Democrat has chosen to support McCain. Just yesterday, Connecticut U.S. Senator and former vice presidential candidate Joe Lieberman says the Arizona senator is his man. Still, endorsements are not votes. McCain's poll numbers at this point, anyway, often find him in third place. Some Republicans say they just can't get past the senator's position on two issues, immigration and campaign finance reform. Add to that religious conservatives who've never been comfortable with McCain and libertarians who are furious about the Iraq War, a war McCain has long supported. Today in The Exchange, Arizona Senator and Republican presidential candidate John McCain returns to our studios. We'll take your calls and emails too. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. And Senator McCain, we last spoke in July. Welcome back.
Thank you, Laura. It's nice to be back. The weather's changed a little bit since I was here in July. Could I mention the Portsmouth Herald also endorsed?
You can mention that. The weather has gotten colder, but the endorsements have gotten warmer for you, Senator McCain.
Yes, I'm very pleased. And of course, it was incredible day yesterday with my friend Joe Lieberman. He's a man of courage. The easiest thing for Joe to have done was just stand on the sidelines in this race. And it really is about national security that caused him to take a position that I'm sure will not earn him a lot of praise in some quarters. But he's one of the finest men I've ever known, and I'm very grateful that he would support me. And these are very interesting times.
Well, I want to ask you about some interesting endorsements. And as I noted, the Boston Globe, the Des Moines Register, both papers whose editorial pages support more liberal positions than you in general, like abortion rights, and Senator Lieberman, a former Democrat. And yet, Senator McCain, you're running in a Republican primary. What are core conservative Republican voters to make of the fact that liberal newspapers and Democrats like you?
Well, I think they should also take in consideration the well-known liberal newspaper, the Manchester Union Leader, also endorsed me. So, look, what I think the endorsements are about is ability to lead and experience and judgment. And so I'm pleased to have the editorial support of all of these periodicals. But let me also point out the Boston Globe, and I say this very respectfully, pointing out they think I should be the nominee of my party. They didn't say that I should be president of the United States because we do have some differences. But I've been to the editorial board of the Boston Globe, and we have honest differences, but those are respectful differences.
These endorsements do raise a long issue, though, a concern by conservatives that you're not conservative enough to be a Republican. The American Conservative Union gives you the lowest ranking of all the Republican presidential candidates.
And that was because of campaign finance reform. I have a solid conservative record by the pro-life organizations, by the National Taxpayers Union, by Citizens for Against Government Waste. I'll name you a long list. And the American Conservative Union felt that their litmus issue was campaign finance reform.
Why was that? Why is that such a bugaboo?
I think some of them are very honestly held views about freedom of speech, the belief that money is free speech. I believe money is property. But sometimes it's hard for me to understand when we have so much corruption in Washington associated with special interest money. We've got people going to jail. We've had people in jail.
You got caught up in one of those, too, the Keating Five from
back in
years back.
91, yeah. And so It's a system now, frankly, of corruption, earmarks in return for campaign contributions. And you'd think that most people would want to clean up this system more transparency. We need to do that, for example. But look, those are the things that happen. At the end of the day, Laura, I am proud of my long conservative record and consistent record. Mine hasn't changed throughout the years. I haven't changed with what office I'm running for. I have not changed my positions, and I am proud of my conservative record. And I will stand on that. Now, if it's an unpopular stand, then I understand that too. But I have to do what's right. And very frankly, the issue that has probably hurt me more than any other is immigration.
I wanted to ask you about that too.
And so, look, I saw a problem. I come from a state that's very badly damaged by illegal immigration. Our state has huge challenges. And Senator John Kyle, my fellow senator, and I thought we have to do something about this. And we said we'd secure the borders and that we would have a temporary worker program and address the issue of 12 million people who are here in this country illegally. The American people, because they have no trust in government, because of Katrina, out of control spending, Iraq, they didn't believe us when we said we would secure the borders. And maybe with good reason, because in 86, we said we'd secure the borders, gave amnesty a couple of million people, and now we have the situation we're in today. So I got the message. The message is the American people want the border secured first, and then they are willing to move on to other aspects of the illegal immigration issue. As president, I would have the border state governors certify that the borders are secure. So we must secure the borders. I still think we need a temporary worker program that works with biometric tamper-proof visas and other things, including an electronic employment verification system. We have to address the issue of the 12 million people.
What do you do with people
amnesty,
who are here?
People,
do you ship them all back? What do you do?
You look at each one of these. First of all, the principle is you can't reward anybody for illegal behavior, so they have to get in line behind everybody else. And some of it depends on how long they've been in this country and what they've been doing.
Whether they have children?
Yeah. All of those factors have to be taken into consideration. But that's the subject of negotiation, based on the principle that no one will be rewarded for illegal behavior, in other words, put ahead of someone who legally waited outside this country or is here legally. But we can work that out. But I also finally want to add, there's also a humanitarian side to this. These are God's children, and we need to address this issue with humanity and compassion. And it would be very helpful if we lowered the level of rhetoric and sat down and discuss this in as calm a fashion as possible. But from town hall meetings here and all over America, this is a very emotional issue with many people. They're deeply concerned, and they want the border secured first. And that's the lesson I got. That's why we failed. So I'll do that as president.
Why that immigration bill failed. You know, Senator McCain, I want to ask you just one more question on this, because I have seen time and time again Republicans say, I just can't join him because of this. You said that the lesson you learned is secure the borders. You said that you can't reward people for illegal behavior.
Nope.
They need to get in line behind everyone else.
Yep.
That sounds to me like you take the 12 million and you ship them back.
No, it doesn't necessarily mean that. It means that maybe
some— Which a lot of people say would be a very difficult thing to do.
Well, I don't know exactly how you would do it, but the point is that some people who have been here a short time, I think, go back. Others may have to go back to the country that they came from for a period of time and then come back. If someone's here who's 80 years old and has a son or a grandson or daughter fighting in Iraq, then we ought to say, take the naturalization test, learn English, pay a fine, et cetera, et cetera. But first, they've all got to come forward so we can make sure we understand where they are and what the categories are. It's a subject of negotiation. But again, our nation is characterized by Judeo-Christian values, and we have to exercise those values when we talk about children, when we talk about people who are elderly, when we talk about all aspects of this issue.
I want to invite our audience to join us. Senator McCain, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the exchange, Arizona Republican Senator John McCain returns to our studios to talk about his campaign for president. Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Emails are welcome, too. If you keep them short, exchange@nhpr.org. Senator McCain, let's go to our callers and go to Monica. She is calling from Lee. Hi, Monica. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning, Senator McCain. I congratulate you because my husband just wrote a letter to the editor that he hasn't sent off yet. He will send off today to support you. And he is a liberal Republican, if I can say so, and very much against the war, very much. But he appreciates your integrity, what you stand for. And that is very important to him.
So he opposes the war, Monica, but he's going to vote for McCain anyway, even though Senator McCain is
a
supporter of the war.
Yes, with character issue.
Well, what do you think about that, Monica?
And I am a Democrat, and I am very... I also go for integrity, and I am very impressed by Senator Joe Biden.
Who was here yesterday.
My husband also likes him. But he wrote that letter in support of you, Senator McCain. And so I appreciate his opinion.
Okay, Monica, I'm going to let you go because we're running into a break. Senator McCain, quickly,
could
do you want to respond? Please,
yeah.
Yes.
Thank you, Monica, and thank your husband and... Look, we are succeeding in Iraq, and there's no doubt about it. And I want to make that clear. And because of the new strategy and the new and the general Petraeus, and I'm the only one that's running for president that criticized harshly the Rumsfeld strategy, advocated the strategy that is succeeding.
And more boots on the ground.
Many other things. I mean, the fundamental strategy of going out and search and destroy as opposed to what we're doing now, and that's clear and hold. I won't go into all the details with you. But also, Monica, I think and I believe your husband represents the reason why I'm going to win. Even though they may have disagreements with me, whether it be liberal or conservative, they believe I have the experience and the judgment. And I thank you very much, Monica, and thank your husband for me.
And thanks for that call. We'll take more of them after a short break. And Senator McCain, got a couple follow-ups for you on this surge. Not everyone thinks that it's going so well. We'll talk about that after a short break.
It is 9:19. Good morning. Support for New Hampshire Public Radio comes from UR members and from Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center, Lebanon, New Hampshire, offering support and opportunity to employees. Information at lifeworkshere.org. And Cobb Hill Construction, providing professional construction services for residential and commercial projects throughout New Hampshire for over 20 years. CobbHill.com. More with Arizona Senator and Republican presidential candidate John McCain on The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio, then at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show. The latest on the race for the White House with less than 3 weeks to go before the voting kicks off in Iowa. New Hampshire weather for this afternoon, partly to mostly sunny across the state. High temperature teens in northern New Hampshire, upper 20s in the south. It'll be clouding up tonight, low single numbers in the north and around 12 degrees in the south. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're talking with U.S. Senator John McCain, a Republican from Arizona, about his second run for the White House. You can join our conversation, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org. Senator McCain, just before the break, we heard from a caller whose liberal Republican husband supports you, even though he's very frustrated over the war with Iraq. Mm-hmm. You responded in saying that the surge is working. Mm-hmm. But as you know, not everybody thinks the surge is working. A recent LA Times article, the Baghdad reporter from the paper said, if anything, the country appears more balkanized into ethnic and sectarian enclaves. Iraq has disintegrated into areas dominated by militias, tribes, and parties. So doesn't sound like a great situation. Sounds like a situation ripe for violence when the U.S. leaves.
Well, I mean, you can say that pigs fly. That's, you know, black is white, up is down. The fact is that, in fact, on ABC Evening News a couple of nights ago, it showed that for the first time in years, there was 24 hours without an instance of violence in Baghdad. picture on the front page of New York Times of a wedding. There's a long way to go in Iraq, but to think that the surge isn't working is in defiance of facts on the ground and all of the statistics such as casualties, etc. And there's a news report today that there's a little progress on the Maliki government side, which is what I anticipated, although it's very, very difficult and very frustrating, because once you establish an environment of security, then the political, social, and economic process moves forward. By any indicator, the surge is working. Now, again, LA Times reporter, there's other liberal media that will say these things, and that's fine with me, but they're in defiance of facts on the ground. And I would rather trust, frankly, General Petraeus, who is one of the greatest Americans I know, than a reporter from the LA Times, in all due respect. So it's working. Is there problems? Of course. The military, the police has ridden with Shia militia, and that's a big problem. The Maliki government is still sputtering, to say the least, but there's enormous progress on the ground politically. And in Ramadi, where they used to be a free fire zone, they're now giving out soccer balls and candy. So I'm very satisfied with the success of the surge. Now we need the other part of the classic counterinsurgency equation to work, and it is working.
Here's an email from Diane in Intervale. She says, "You've been a supporter of the Bush-Petraeus surge strategy. What happens in Baghdad after American troops inevitably leave?" I would add to Diane's question, Senator McCain, under a McCain administration, when would they leave?
First of all, I would point out, Diane, that I was the harshest critic of the Rumsfeld strategy and said it wouldn't work. And I said the new strategy is what we needed. No other person running for president on either side advocated that. And I was criticized by Republicans for being disloyal. I'll tell you what happens. The same thing that happens when in any other successful counterinsurgency, the Iraqi military and police take over the responsibilities. Americans withdraw from the front lines. And whether they will stay there or not is a question of the relationship with the Iraqi government. It's not a question of American presence. We've got troops in Bosnia. We have troops in South Korea. We have troops in Japan. We have troops all over the world. The question is American casualties. American casualties are way down, thank God. But I want to emphasize, Al-Qaeda is on the run. They are not defeated. They are not defeated. And it's going to be a while before you can stop suicide bombers because they're the hardest thing in warfare to counter. Ask the Israelis. So what's going to happen is what happens in every counterinsurgency, and that is that American troops turn over those responsibilities, as, by the way, they just did in another province in the last couple of days, and they will assume those responsibilities. And that's what counterinsurgency is all about. That's why the Rumsfeld strategy of search and destroy failed, and that's why this clear and hold and establish environment of security has succeeded.
Can you give us an idea of when U.S. troops would come home or not really?
Well, I think.
Because the Democrats all have timetables.
Yeah, date for surrender. That's what they have. If we'd have done what the Democrats wanted to do 6 months ago, Al-Qaeda would be telling the world that they defeated the United States of America. Harry Reid on the floor of the Senate said the war is lost. No one believes that now. As I said, the overwhelming opinion is the war is certainly not lost militarily. Senator Clinton said to General Petraeus when he appeared before Congress, before the Senate Armed Services Committee, said you would have to, quote, suspend disbelief in order to believe that the surge is working. Well, I'm waiting for Senator Clinton to say that the surge is working, because it is working. You'd have to suspend disbelief that it's not. So the military equation on the ground has changed dramatically, and we are succeeding, and we have a long way to go. And I want to emphasize again, Al-Qaeda is on the run. They are not defeated. There's still explosive devices coming across from Iran into Iraq, killing young Americans. There's still suicide bombers landing at the airport in Damascus and coming across. And there's still a lot of factionalism that is going to have to be kept under control. And I'm sorry for the long answer, Laura. And by the way, one small item. Monica mentioned she liked Joe Biden. I like Joe Biden, too. He's a fine man and very well-versed on national security issues.
Well, Senator, we could go on about Iraq. Maybe we'll come back to that later. I want to go to our callers now. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Let's go to Portsmouth next. Sam is on the air. Welcome, Sam. Go ahead.
Thank you, Laura. Senator McCain,
hey, Sam.
I'd like to ask you about climate change, and specifically, you've talked in the past about pure research and development, money for going into pure research and development for renewable fuels. And I'd like to hear you get a little bit more specific about that, and not just in the sense of listing technologies, but more a description of the program, because I think that the market will decide the technologies, so it's really the R&D program that's important.
Okay, Sam, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Senator
McCain. Well, Sam, first of all, as you know, I have been a strong believer that climate change is real and poses a threat to our planet. And I've done that for a long period of time. Joe Lieberman and I have proposed this cap and trade, which is now working in Europe, but not very well, but working, and did work in the case of acid rain. Look, I'm for R&D, and I'll let the scientists set the priorities. Clean coal technology is certainly one of the priorities that I would say, because we're sitting on mountains of coal, and if we could develop clean coal technology, it will have a dramatic effect on greenhouse gas emissions, Sam. I'm for finding ways to reprocess and to store nuclear waste. Look, hybrid cars, hydrogen. Listen, let 1,000 flowers bloom, my friend, and let our scientific community and our smart people set those priorities, and I will go along with theirs. But I really believe nuclear power and that technology is a vital part of any meaningful effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Did you want to follow up, Sam?
I want to actually ask you something. Two questions. Clean coal, first of all, a couple Democrats and other Republicans support that. The word that I hear from many environmental groups, Senator McCain, is, look, don't bother with this. Let's move on to purely clean technologies like wind and solar. Why bother with something that really isn't proven and you know, it's pretty dirty.
Well, that's why we call it clean coal technology.
Well, I know, but I've heard that you really can't do that.
Well, Laura, I've heard that we couldn't put a guy on the moon, too. I mean, I believe the first immediate step is nuclear. Find a way to store it. Find a way to reprocess it the way the Europeans do. But in all due respect, I love wind, solar, and tide. We all love it. Find me a living American that doesn't want those. But when you look at the actual contribution, given the state of technology that they can make in eliminating greenhouse gas emissions and fulfilling our energy requirements, they are not that's significant. So my first priority, frankly, would be nuclear, because we already have the technology there and we would move forward with it. But I really believe that if the French can generate 80% of their electricity by nuclear power, we have had Navy ships sailing around the world for 60 years with nuclear power plants, then I say to my friends in the environmental community, let's embrace nuclear power as one of our first priorities.
We did a program a couple weeks ago, Senator McCain, on nuclear power, because you're right, it is getting a second look as people are more and more concerned about climate change. And the calls and emails were pretty firm in that people are incredibly nervous about this energy. Huge concerns about the waste, huge concerns about nuclear energy being vulnerable to a terrorist attack. And again, the question was, look, why bother with this source of power that could be a huge risk when you've got other renewable energies that won't pose hazards for future generations?
Because you don't have enough of the renewable energies. You don't have enough solar. The technology there is not sufficient. Look, if the French could do it, if Europeans can do it, if the Japanese can do it, and the French, by the way, are coming closest to meeting their Kyoto Treaty obligations. Why? Because of nuclear power. We have the worst of all worlds now because we have nuclear waste in sites all over America. That's the worst national security issue. And so,
because we haven't built Yucca Mountain yet.
Yeah. Well, we built it, but obviously it's being blocked by court suits, etc. It can be reprocessed. It was a decision made by former President Carter back in the 70s. But it's not the only component. There are many other components that we have to look at. But finally, could I just mention, Laura, without a long diatribe, When oil hits $100 a barrel, the United States of America will be sending $400 billion a year to the oil-producing companies. Some of that money will end up in the hand of terrorist organizations. So we must not only reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but we've got to reduce and eventually eliminate our dependence on foreign oil.
Well, nuclear power, huge debate.
Yeah.
Difficult to reach any consensus on it.
Take a trip to France, my friends, and see what they do.
All right. Let's
go
back.
We always love to imitate the French.
I was going to say, that's unusual for a presidential candidate to say.
They got a president that vacations in New Hampshire. He's a great, great person, pro-American.
Sam, thanks a lot for that call. Again, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Let's go back to the phones over to Vermont, where Richard's calling from Dummerston. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Hi, Richard.
Hi, Senator McCain. My question for you is, a while ago, several months ago, your campaign was having terrible problems. You were having to let staff go. You were having financial difficulties. And I remember that you you took the heat for it and said it was your responsibility. And my concern is that if you had trouble just managing the budget of your campaign, how can we really trust you to handle the budget of the nation?
Well, thank you, Richard. The fact is that I am not mistake-free and never have been. I obviously fixed our problems, and that's why we are doing well in our campaign today. I fixed them. I know how to fix problems when they arise, and I'm not saying that there would never be a problem or a mistake. I will match my record of being a fiscal conservative with anybody. I saved the taxpayers $2 billion on an Air Force tanker deal that they tried to pull off that ended up with a couple of people in jail. I have eliminated and fought against hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of pork barrel spending, and I'll be glad to match my record of eliminating waste and abuse and unnecessary spending with anyone, and it's far better. So I will not say that I will not make a mistake, but I say that I know how to fix them when they are made, and I have a clear record of knowing how Washington works in eliminating wasteful pork barrel spending.
Thanks, Richard, for that call. Let's go to Gilmanton. David's on the air. Welcome, David. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura.
Hi.
Hi, David.
I would like to start by making a statement that I've never been a one-issue voter. But I fully expect to be in this particular election, and that issue is going to be health care. I would love to know where the senator stands. By way of background, I'm mired so deeply in the health care mess, it's ridiculous. My 13-year-old daughter is a type 1 diabetic. I have a failed spinal fusion, and between our two problems, my wife and I spend better than 25% of our gross income on health care, and by all accounts, we are very well insured. I sit in doctor's offices, and I certainly see problems that I don't think anybody's addressing, things like meaningful tort reform, pharmaceutical companies that spend more money on advertising than they do on research and development, the graft that goes on between pharmaceutical reps and the doctor's offices, things of that nature.
Well, David, good to get your perspective, and I did want to talk to you about health care. Senator McCain, go ahead, just give us the bare bones of your health care plan, and then I have a couple questions.
Very quickly, first of all, David, I believe I agree with you about the undue influence of pharmaceutical companies. One of the reasons I voted against the Medicare prescription drug bill was because I thought it was written by the pharmaceutical companies, and I could give you
examples of that. Seniors seem pretty happy with that.
What's that?
Seniors seem pretty happy with the Medicare drug plan.
They may be happy with it, but we've laid a $1 trillion unfunded liability on the next generation of Americans to add to the unfunded some $30 trillion associated with Medicare and Medicaid.
But could you say that by keeping seniors healthier with drugs, that they're staying out of hospitals, and so maybe there's a net gain, even though you don't see it on paper?
The drugs don't have to be as the expense that they are. They said that they couldn't compete with one another for contracts to provide these pharmaceuticals. They said that we couldn't go to Canada and re-import pharmaceuticals. It's not that they're, in all due respect, it's not that we're trying to deprive them of pharmaceuticals. We're trying to give them pharmaceuticals that are the at least expensive to the taxpayer and to their children and their grandchildren, including expediting generic drugs to market. I mean,
so lack of competitiveness is the problem with it. Democrats made that same point too, didn't they, during this debate?
Well, there weren't many votes against it. I don't know what the point was, but they certainly didn't vote against it. So
go ahead, Senator McCain. Your health care
plan.
Real
quick, David. The problem, I think, in health care in America is the cost and the inflation, not the quality. The quality of health care in America is the best in the world. That's why when somebody gets sick who lives overseas, if they can afford it, they come here. We need to take the inflation out of it, and we've got to have a more responsibility in the hands of the person who is responsible for his or her health care. We have to have wellness and fitness. We have to have tort reform. We have to medical malpractice reform. We have to have result-based health care. One of the five chronic diseases that consume 75% of the healthcare costs in America, those people should be given a certain amount of money by the provider for a year of treatment, and rather than for every test, every procedure that's performed. We need walk-in clinics. We need community health centers. We need to give every American family a $5,000 refundable tax credit so they can go across state lines, which they can't now, and get the health care a policy that they want. Wellness and fitness. We have to emphasize wellness and fitness in America. Look, Laura, I'm truncating this dramatically. I've had a 90-minute forum with AARP just on healthcare alone. But the key to it is get inflation down. Medicaid inflation last year was 10%, over 10%. No system can sustain itself with that kind of inflation. The Democrats want a big government, single payer, raise your taxes, and we're going to have a great debate on that in the 2008 general election because of vastly different views of the role of government.
Well, and I definitely want to talk about that. Some of the Democrats have single payer. Most of them provide an ability for people to buy into the congressional health care system that you and others enjoy on a sliding scale. So it's mm-hmm. still based on the private system, but they would say much more comprehensive, Senator McCain, than what you and the Republicans are offering at a time when businesses say, look, this is a crisis and we really need help. Piecemeal, 5,000 here, whatever. It's not broad enough. It's not comprehensive enough. It's not big enough to deal with this problem.
Well, if you think that you need a big, as you said, government solution to it, fine. You're entitled to that opinion. I respect it. Look, one of the fundamental differences, they're going to mandate health insurance for every American. I'm going to make it affordable and available. I want every American to have an education. I want every American to have a home. I'm not going to mandate that they have an education or a home, but I'm going to make it affordable and available. So that's one of the fundamental differences.
Well, David, thanks for the call and good luck to you. We will take more of your calls after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our members, and from Wyman Chevrolet Pontiac and Truck Center in Hillsboro, selling and servicing the Chevrolet commercial truck line for over 50 years. Chevrolet American Revolution at WymanChevy.com. And Hinckley, Allen & Snyder, where partners have been giving clients practical, usable legal advice for over 100 years, in New Hampshire and on the web at HASlaw.com. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
Henry Wadsworth Longfellow described music as the universal language of mankind. I'm Marco Werman. Every weekday on The World, we examine that language with our daily global hit.
Manu Chao is Spanish and French, but he also writes and sings in English, Portuguese, and Arabic. Manu Chao makes music that is part reggae and part punk rock.
Expand your vocabulary with The World, weekdays at 3 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Wednesday in The Exchange, our 25 and 25 series continues with North Country writer, reporter, and raconteur John Harrigan. Email us your questions for John before the program and join us Wednesday live at 9. Then on Thursday, Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul is with us. And on Friday, we culminate our 25 and 25 series with our final guest, you, the Granite Stater. How have you seen our state change over the past quarter century, for the better and for the worse? We'd love to include your comments, your observations in our program. Email us at exchange@nhpr.org. Today in The Exchange, Republican presidential candidate and Arizona Senator John McCain is here. You can join our conversation. The number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477. NHPR. Senator McCain, we've talked about energy, we've talked about health care, we've talked about Iraq. We have not yet talked about trade, and that has also been a tension point in this campaign for both Republicans and Democrats. You are a stalwart free trader, even in crowds like the Republican debate in Detroit, where the auto industry feels it's gotten slammed by imports. You stood up for free trade. But you don't need me to tell you this. You know, globalization is a dirty word in some circles today. People blame too much open, unrestricted trade on anything from a loss of jobs to tainted toothpaste and toys. What can you say to those voters, Senator McCain, who really feel threatened by free trade?
I think one of the ways that
we, in terms of what you would do for them as president.
Well, I think one of the major aspects of this issue that's so damaging to the image of, quote, free trade is our displaced worker problem, whether it be the automotive industry in Detroit or whether if you go up north and go to Berlin and see where the manufacturing jobs have fled the area either to another state or in many cases to another country. Look, I think that if you look back at the last 10 years, America's economy has been very strong. We've created millions of jobs. We're in the midst of a revolution, and it's an information technology revolution. And unfortunately, although the overall benefits have been good, we have left workers behind. And we have to develop a displaced worker program that's meaningful, effective, and will allow these people who have lost their jobs because of the flight of manufacturing jobs another chance.
Don't we have those programs
already? No, they don't work. They don't work.
What's
wrong with
them?
Programs. They obviously don't work. Well, I don't know all of the reasons, but they're not designed right and they're not implemented right. I would go to our community colleges and ask our community colleges to design and implement programs to provide the kind of training and education necessary to have people reenter the workforce. And I am no liberal. But if someone lost a relatively high-paying job and can only take a lower-paying, much lower-paying job, I would compensate that worker for the difference in what the jobs that they have to take because we want to get them back to work. But it's the whole secret of this is to get education training programs at work. There's a half. You mentioned the federal program. There's a half a dozen of them now. They don't work. They were designed for the 1950s. So. When automobiles were invented, the harness industry lost jobs. We're in an information technology situation, and in the Industrial Revolution, we left people behind. In this information technology revolution, we cannot leave people behind. We cannot say their lives are over at a relatively early age, and we got to prepare them to the kind of job market there is today.
The Democrats, some of them are saying scrap free trade agreements like NAFTA. Most are saying don't scrap them, but make them better. Make sure that workers are protected. Make sure environmental concerns are met. Would you do something like that, Senator McCain, or just leave these trade agreements as is?
Oh, I would certainly do everything that I can to make sure that environmental standards are met, that rules and regulations as far as toys are concerned. I mean, all these are kind of no-brainer kind of things. But I want to tell you again, free trade has been an element of America's economic success for 200 years. And every time we've exercised protectionism, the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Acts of the 1920s, we have paid a very, very heavy price for it. I am a student of history, and history clearly shows that protectionism harms the economy of the country that practices it, and the consequences sometimes can even be a world war. So what's the best way to improve the economy? We've got a lot of problems on our hemisphere today because of disparities between rich and poor is one of the reasons. And what's the best way to do that? Open our markets to their products and open their markets to ours. And by the way, the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, our staunchest ally in the hemisphere, is being held up by the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader of the Senate. I think that's terrible.
Let's go back to our caller, yep. Senator McCain. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, to Albany, where Dorothy's on the air. Welcome, Dorothy. You're on the exchange with Senator McCain.
Hi. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity.
Sure. Go ahead, Dorothy.
My question is this. I already know the first part of my question. You will not end this war. So the second part of my question has to do with your fiscal conservatism. How then, as a fiscal conservative, did you let us get into a debt, a national debt of last week $9.13 trillion, at which $1 million that grows per minute, much of it because of the war? How are you going to get us out of this as president? What are you going to do about reducing the national debt that is on our children and grandchildren? And also the fact that with our national debt, much of it is held by China, who also is a great holds a great source of our dollars because of trade.
Well, Dorothy,
what happens if they dump our dollar?
Dorothy, these are two good financial questions. Could you address the national debt issue and tell us, Senator McCain, how much is the Iraq war costing the United States per month?
I don't remember the exact number. It varies with whether how you calculate the cost. It's very expensive. Dorothy, I will end the war. Dorothy, I will end the war. I want to end it with honor and bring our soldiers and Marines and airmen and sailors home with honor. And I won't have to send them back because of the chaos and genocide that would ensue because we would do what the Democrats want to do, and that set a date for surrender. So let me be very clear, Dorothy. I will end the war, and I will end it honorably. And I am confident with the success we are achieving that that's a very, very possible. I'd stop the spending, Dorothy. I'd stop the entitlements. I'd stop the wasteful spending. I'd stop enacting entitlement programs, which we are laying the payment for on future generations of Americans. I will.
What types of entitlement, Senator McCain? Because
Social Security. I just mentioned the Medicare prescription drug bill.
So get rid of it or fix it?
No, have it paid for. Have a way to pay for it, Laura. And I might say that we have got to fix Social Security and Medicare. It will not be there for next generations of young Americans. And we're going to have to sit down, Republican and Democrat alike. In 1983, Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill stood in the Rose Garden and said, we're going to fix Social Security. And they did for about 25 or 30 years. We're going to have to repair these entitlement programs, and we're going to have to stop enacting programs that we don't pay for, that we're asking the next generation of young Americans to pay for. And spending got completely out of control under this administration. I fought against it. I voted against it. And as President of the United States, I can tell you, I will veto them, and I will make the authors of them famous. I know how to stop the wasteful spending, as I said. I saved the taxpayer at least $2 billion on one program. I've saved lots and lots of other millions and hundreds of millions by blocking other programs and out-of-control spending. Dorothy, I'm sure you appreciate the fact that our Republican base became very disenchanted because of the spending, because of the bridge to nowhere, a $233 million bridge to an island in Alaska with 50 people on it. It's going to stop, and I will exercise the veto pen and reform our entitlement programs, and then we will have fiscal sanity.
What about China? That has been coming up a lot in Republican and Democratic debates. Just broadly, Senator McCain, what should the American approach toward China be?
I think it's one of caution. China will be a world power. There's no doubt about that. I worry about a trade deficit, although our American exports the last 6 months have been way up and a major source of our economic growth. But I worry when China puts missiles across the straits from Taiwan. I worry when China shoots down a military intelligence satellite that's at the same altitude as ours are. I worry when decisions are made that affect China and the world in a seaside resort in secret. I worry when they renege on their commitment for Hong Kong to basically preserve their fundamental rights, which are being abridged. I worry a lot about China. But the reality is that China will be a world superpower. They will be. And the question is how they enter the stage, and it requires leadership and knowledge and background. And I believe that I have that. So there's a lot of things I worry about China, and the trade deficit is one of those. But I know how to deal with the Chinese, and I know how we can best help them enter the world stage. And one of those ways, by the way, Dorothy, is to maintain a military presence in Asia, have alliance in Asia with countries like Japan and Indonesia and others, and make sure that there is a balance in Asia militarily, diplomatically, economically, and ideologically.
Senator McCain, now you said on China just now and on other issues such as Iraq that you know how to deal with these issues.
Why? I just proved that in my approach to the Iraq war.
And why do you know better than the other Republican candidates? Why knowledge. You over Giuliani and Romney, who, by the way, are still leading you in most polls at this point?
Well, Laura, to start with, I've been involved in every national security issue in the last 20 years. I have been involved, whether it be Bosnia or Kosovo or the first Gulf War or any other. They haven't. I've shown the judgment because of the knowledge and background that I have, that I have the judgment to lead. These are tough situations. Look, when I was bitterly opposing the Rumsfeld strategy, none of these other candidates said that. When I was advocating the Petraeus strategy, which Senator Edwards, by the way, when you have him on, he used to call it the McCain strategy or the McCain surge. He doesn't anymore. And so I have a proven record of addressing national security challenges for the last 20 years. And before that, for 20 years, being involved in the active duty military and actually being around many of these crises, beginning, frankly, with the Cuban Missile Crisis. So it's knowledge, experience, and judgment.
Given that you think you have the knowledge, experience, and judgment to
lead. I don't think so.
You know so.
Yeah,
okay.
Go. There you go.
I'll give you that because this is your hour. Why do you suppose, Senator McCain, that your campaign is not, you know, surging ahead of everybody else?
Well, I think we're doing fine. We talked about the endorsements. We talked about moving up in the polls. We talked about increasing our contributions. I'm very proud of the performance that I've had in the debates. I'm very pleased with the way things are going. And I'm confident we will do very well here in New Hampshire. I'm confident of that.
I've got a couple emails I want to share with you, Senator McCain.
Good.
This is from Rob. He says, Laura, please tell the senator I have decided, based on his comments today and on television, to support his candidacy. His positions on the war, border control, gun laws, government reform, fiscal conservative make him the best match. He could make America feel good itself again, much like I felt during the Reagan years. So that's Rob.
Thank you, Rob. But God bless you. But here comes the bad news.
Here comes
Thank
the
you,
other
Rob.
One. Here comes the other one. This is from True in Elkins. Senator, you are sounding tired to me, both today and in what I heard of the NPR radio debate. Are you truly still ready, assuming this person's talking about your age, which is 70, I think, to assume the weight of the presidency?
True. Come on out to a town hall meeting. We'll get you the schedule. Call my office, and you'll see we spent, I think, a 16-hour day yesterday. We're having fun. It's great, great enjoyment, and I have never been more enthusiastic than I am now. And I tell you, it's exciting, and this is the exciting time of a political campaign, and I'm invigorated by it, to tell you the truth, True.
I have another question for you. This is from Tim in Dover. You've answered half of this already, Senator mm-hmm. McCain, but the other mm-hmm. half you haven't. Tim's an independent voter, willing to support Republican candidates, but he says, I refuse to check my brain at the door on global warming, evolution, and other issues of science and faith. He says, can you state for New Hampshire voters that you believe in both global warming and evolution?
Yes, and I've stated that in the past, but Tim, I'd like to emphasize to you very briefly, now, because I know we haven't got a lot of time, but When I campaigned here in 2000, at town hall meeting after town hall meeting, young people came up, stood up and said, what are you going to do about global warming? I went back to the Senate, and we had hearing after hearing on my committee, and I've been engaged in this issue, Tim, for a long time. And I believe we can find market-based, incentive-based, capitalist ways. In fact, like GE is the world's largest corporation, has dedicated themselves to green technologies. I'm not asking you to shiver in the dark, but I am saying, Tim, that we owe our next generation of Americans a cleaner world, and it has to be the highest priority of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And I hope you'd look at Joe Lieberman's and my proposal on cap and trade. We
what
can
about
do
evolution?
It. We can do it. Oh, I think I happen to believe in evolution. But look, I'm not running for president because of evolution or intelligent design. I'm running for president because I want to win the war against the struggle against radical Islamic extremism. I want to make this country safe. I want to ensure its future. I want to stop the spending. I want to give leadership that Americans can trust and confidence in their government again. I'm not running for president because of evolution.
In one debate, I think the Democrats were asked about their favorite Bible quotes. It seems more and more in presidential debates, candidates are asked about their religion. How appropriate do you think this discussion of faith is in a presidential election, Senator McCain?
It's up to the questioner. All I do is answer the question. I happen to be a person of faith, and faith took me through some very difficult times in my life, and I've made many, many mistakes in my life, and I'm a great believer in redemption. But it's up to the priorities of the voters themselves.
Speaking of redemption, I want to talk about your political campaign in the 1 minute that we have left, Senator McCain.
Good.
Why haven't you campaigned very much in Iowa? And how well do you think you're going to do there in spite of that?
We've been out there. We were out there last week. Mm-hmm. It's very tough in Iowa. I don't support ethanol subsidies, and that obviously is a big issue out in Iowa. I've got to give them straight talk. I think I can open every market in the world to ethanol and their products, agricultural products, but I don't support subsidies for ethanol, and I don't support cotton subsidies, which is grown in my own state of Arizona. We're still working in Iowa, but it's very tough. I'm very encouraged here in New Hampshire, and I'm very encouraged in South Carolina. I know we've got a long way to go, and I know that the majority of voters have not made up their minds, either here or South Carolina, and that's why I'm very happy to have the chance to be with you again, Laura, and suffer this interrogation.
I've never had it put quite that way, but I will say, thank you very much, Senator McCain.
It's great to be with you again, Laura.
All right.
Thanks again.
That's Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona, a Republican presidential candidate. A reminder that our presidential coverage continues on Thursday with Republican Ron Paul. So join us for that. Email us before the program if you want, exchange@nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The producer's Ty Fraley. The engineer, Dan Colgan. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy. We'll